Ladies, to my right, you guys can get started. Good evening, everyone. Thanks for joining us. I'll ask we all rise for the pledge to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. I'll ask the clerk to call the roll.
Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Present.
Dr. Enix.
Present.
Ms. Kwiatek.
Present.
Ms. Leon.
Present.
Dr. Van Wert.
Present.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Present.
And Mr. Colon.
Present. So public hearings. We have a few public hearings scheduled for this evening. Prior to the consideration of our regular agenda items, City Council will conduct two public hearings. Public hearing number one is going to be to accept public comment and discussion concerning the 2022 CDBG home recommended allocations. At this hearing, the city's program year 2022 annual action plan for the community development block grant and home investment partnerships will be reviewed. And then after that, we're going to have our second public hearing. The second public hearing is to accept recommendations and public comment concerning the proposed ordinance that establishes Article 343 and associated resolution for the creation of Southside LRTA District Number 2. In connection with this public hearing, there is one communication which the clerk will read.
Memorandum from Darlene Keller, Director of Planning and Zoning, stating that the City Planning Commission met on May 12, 2022 and unanimously recommended approval of the draft revised map boundaries the Southside LRTA District as presented at the meeting.
Thank you. So moving on, we're going to call the first public hearing to order concerning the proposed 2022 CDBG and home allocations. I will now recognize a representative for the administration. And sir, if you'll mind just identifying yourself in case members of council aren't familiar.
My name is Robert Vidoni, and I am the Housing and Community Development Administrator in the Community Economic Development Department. So, up at your seat, you do have a presentation. I'm not going to be reading through every single line of this, so we'll try to run through quickly and get to any questions. I know there's another public hearing, so I'm going to try to be respectful of that. So, as you stated, this presentation is going to be about the 2022 CDBG and Home Annual Action Plan. This is the second public hearing that we have every year in an annual process related to CDBG and home funding. CDBG means Community Development Block Grant, and the HOME is the Home Investment Partnerships Program. So just turning to page three, the 2022 HUD CDBG and home allocations. Compared to our 2020 awards, our 2022 CDBG award was essentially unchanged, and our home award increased approximately 11%. As you see, our 2022 CDBG allocation was $1,391,666, and our home allocation was $430,794. The 2021 allocations are below that. Just to go into a basic summary of what the CDBG program is. So this is it's a federal program that goes to entitlement communities, and our city is called an entitlement community. And it, through a formula, it grants a community like ours certain funds that we are able to then pass through to other organizations called subrecipients. But it is a very, very flexible program. It's designed to allow for our city to target funds specifically to city issues. And that's one of the great things that is why it is very flexible. And that's why we have the ability to sort of generate our own program recommendations, identify our own subrecipients that we think have great projects. And basically, so this is the second public hearing in the 2022 program year. So CDBG funds enable a range of community development activities. They're directed towards revitalizing neighborhoods, economic development, and improving community facilities and services. Grantees, like our city, we develop our own programs and funding priorities through a five-year planning process. Currently, we have a consolidated plan, which runs from 2020 through 2024. And what we're talking about right here is an annual action plan. The annual action plan has to link up and coordinate with the priorities set out in the consolidated plan. So all CDBG activities, if they're eligible to get these kinds of funds, they must meet one of the following national objectives. They have to benefit low and moderate income persons. They have to prevent or eliminate slums or blight, or they have to address an urgent community need caused by a major condition causing a serious and immediate threat to health and welfare of the community. On page 7, we go to the HOME program. And as I stated before, HOME stands for Home Investment Partnerships Program. So as you see, it was established in 1990. The intent of the program is to increase the supply of quality affordable housing for lower income households. It is meant to expand the capacity of nonprofit housing providers, strengthen the ability of states and local governments to provide housing, and to leverage private sector participation, whether that be from banks or other participants. So on slide 9, we talk about some of the City of Bethlehem programs. We have a home buyer purchase assistance program, which helps with down payment and closing costs. That's called BHAP. We'll hear that later when we get to the list of funded programs. We also have direct buyer subsidies for houses constructed or rehabbed with home funds. So let's see here. I will turn now to 11. So this is 2022 requests versus the actual funding. These funds are always highly competitive. We never have enough money to give out to different projects. And let me just backtrack for a second, just for the public's understanding. So these are federal funds that come from HUD. These are not, you know, fungible with the city's general fund. These are funds that come from, you know, a completely separate bucket. And so this is not, you know, a zero-sum game. Every dollar used for CDBG projects is taken away from something out of the general fund or elsewhere in the city. Now just to get back to requests versus actual funding. So in the 2022 program year, we had 23 applicants. They requested $1,936,033. The recommendation is to fund 18 applicants for a total of $1,391,666. For this year, there were 4 home funding requests, and they are all being recommended for funding. Whenever there's an applicant that is not funded in a program year, they are strongly encouraged to apply during the next funding cycle. The next cycle where you can apply for CDBG funds is going to be coming up in the fall of 2022. That's going to be for the 2023 program year. We are going to be informing the public and council as to that exact date soon. We go to page 12. So you see there's a pie chart here, and it lists out the CDBG activities by activity type. Now everybody, we have a bunch of copies of this sort of large 11 by 17 spreadsheet. The numbers that you see in parentheses match up with the red reference numbers in the leftmost column on the spreadsheet. So it's sort of self-explanatory, but as you can see on the CDBG pie chart, we have 20% going to program administration and planning funds. We have 20% going to public facilities and infrastructure. The NRSA, the Neighborhood Revitalization Stabilization or Strategy Area, which is Northside 2027, that's currently 2%, but we'll talk a little about that later. Public services, that is 15%, and housing is, the aggregate is 43%. And again, those numbers in parentheses line up exactly with the rows, the program rows on the spreadsheet. So turning to the next page, which is the home allocations. Again, it's a pie chart, and the numbers match up with the home programs. Now on the spreadsheet, the home awards. It's at the bottom portion of the page, and those are activities, I'll say 20 through 24. So as you can see on the pie chart, the administration, program administration is set at 10%. Now that's capped. Just to get back to CDBG, we have talked about it before, but the program admin for CDBG is capped at 20%, and the public services is capped at 15%. That's why sometimes you're going to see these, you know, these numbers that match up directly with those percentages. That's standard. That's the way it's done basically every year by our city and many other entitlement jurisdictions. So as to the home allocation pie chart, you can see, as we said, administration is 10%. The CHODO set aside is 15%. Now that's a community housing development organization. We're going to talk a little more when we get to the activities about it. That is a you know, a nonprofit, or it can be for profit. But long story short, it is a community partner that develops certain types of housing, and we have a relationship with that entity. So as you can see, the CACLB homebuyer program, that's item 23, that's 90%, and then future affordable housing project opportunities for home, that is the 33% you see there. So as stated before, our program year is, actually you didn't state this, but our program year runs January 1st through December 31st, so it matches our fiscal year. HUD announced our allocations on May 13th. The city is not going to actually receive any funds until significantly later in the year. We have to submit an annual action plan. HUD has to approve it. There's a bunch of intermediary steps, contracts that need to be executed, various other steps before the money actually comes to the city. Therefore, the city cannot distribute this money to any of the subrecipients for quite a while. On page 15, there's two slides. I'm not going to read everything here, but it talks about the overall CDBG home planning process annually and otherwise. So as I said, every 5 years, we come up with a consolidated strategic plan. And then each program year, we do an annual action plan. So the annual action plan, which we're talking about now, outlines the upcoming, you know, the program year's goals and how they link up with the consolidated plan goals. The application process generally opens in fall each year. Last year, it opened September 21st, and the applications were due November 31st. As stated, we're going to get back to council and we're going to publicize the date when applications open up. We have, once the applications come in, they're reviewed by the Community Development Bureau along with other individuals in the Department of Community and Economic Development. There's an internal committee which reviews and scores the applications and creates a preliminary activities list. This activities list is reviewed and approved by the mayor. So how are these decisions made? On page 17, we have application review factors. There are a bunch of different factors in consideration which this internal committee takes into account. We're not going to go through every single one. It's quite extensive, but I'm just going to highlight some that are quite important. They're all important, but first of all, they have to be eligible activities per the statutory requirements. They have to be consistent with the consolidated plan and the annual action plan. They have to meaningfully impact residents' quality of life. There are a lot of projects that come to the city and you know, they don't all have the same impact. We also care about how many people are going to be impacted by these projects. We want to know that the applicants can spend the funds quickly to avoid timeliness problems. The city is required to spend down these funds within certain time periods, and because these funds are so competitive, HUD wants to make sure they are being utilized and aren't just sitting around. So we want to make sure these projects are sort of ready to go, ideally. So that's one factor. We also want to make sure that the you know, the organization has the capacity to deliver the services, haven't had prior compliance problems, and that they have spent down their prior balances. That's something that is very important. Again, if you haven't spent down a lot of your prior balance and then you're asking for additional money, that's something that, you know, we have to take into account. So as you can see, there are other factors. On page 18, you can look at that. As I said before, the annual action plan goals have to link up and conform to the strategic plan goals. On page 19 and 20, these are the stated annual action plan goals. So the main goals are create and preserve affordable rental housing, preserve owner-occupied housing, enhance homeownership opportunities, address impediments to fair housing choice, support homeless housing and services, support high-quality public services, improve public facilities and infrastructure, create and preserve local jobs, and also to efficiently administer these funds and effectively target them to the needs of the city, you know, in an efficient and timely process. And that's what you get with the CDBG home program administration funds that pay for city staff, both housing rehab, community development staff, and other portions of other salaries for individuals that have to do with the oversight and overall planning of these programs. So now the main part of this presentation, on page 21, we're going to get to the funded projects. So again, these numbers match up with the project reference numbers on the spreadsheet. So project one, that's CDBG program administration and planning costs. So that basically, that pays for salaries, wages, and benefits of local staff, as well as professional fees of consultants that assist with the administration of the CDBG program, along with other planning costs. Studies can fall into this. There are a bunch of different costs which are put in this particular bucket. So project number two, the Center for Humanistic Change Project Success, Crossroads Mentoring. This is a service that provides students in 6th to 12th grade identified as at risk for academic attendance problems and behavioral issues with social emotional support and practical skills needed to develop personal character and resiliency, succeed in school, graduate from high school, and cope with life challenges. Staff mentors work with these students in small groups, one-on-one, and in the classrooms. They also provide case management services, which help refer these at-risk youth to various social services that both the city provides and other organization provides. And it also helps the families of these children with case management as well. So the net project three, HOBER CREA, that's substance abuse counseling. That is comprehensive and intensive inpatient alcohol and drug inpatient treatment that is available to women in the community. And it's targeted low and moderate income women, and again, it's long-term drug and alcohol rehabilitation services and support. It's not just the treatment, it's all sorts of other services, and these are individuals who wouldn't be able to get into beds elsewhere. Obviously, everybody knows there's a serious deficiency in treatment centers, and this is just a great program for people that really have nowhere else to go. Program four, Bethlehem Emergency Shelter. The shelter provides emergency shelter and services to homeless individuals in the city. Five, share care assistance for elderly and disabled individuals. That's a volunteer service that provides free caregiving to elderly and disabled individuals. It serves low and moderate income individuals with caregiving assistance, including transportation, light household and yard chores, visitations to prevent isolation, actually visits with dogs, and respite care. Respite care is very important because it helps provide short-term relief to primary caregivers. Often you have situations where there's an individual who needs care, the only person that can take care of them needs to work, and they have to, it's a terrible decision to, are you going to take care of your parent or disabled relative, or are you going to work? And so this respite care is a really great service. So project six, Lehigh Valley Center for Independent Living, the PLACE program. This project, PLACE stands for People Living in Accessibility Community Environments. This serves residents with disabilities who are living on limited income and may be at risk of homelessness. The funding supports services that allows them to maintain their independence. The staff of this entity also educates landlords, property managers, and realtors on the benefits and requirements of renting to people with disabilities. They also conduct community outreach and training to benefit consumers and disabled renters. Seven, that's New Bethany Ministries Representative Payee Program. This is a program that provides all sorts of fiduciary services to residents with mental health disabilities. And that means that New Bethany Ministries, you know, has an obligation. What they'll do is they provide almost as if they're a bank account for these individuals, people who can't otherwise manage, you know, bank accounts. So New Bethany Ministry will actually help them pay bills and just manage their accounts, which is a huge barrier just to life if you can't have a basic bank account. So it also provides case management and mental health support. And it also helps prevent homelessness because many of these individuals are either at risk or already homeless. So eight, that's Hispanic Center of Lehigh Valley Food Pantry Service. This provides emergency food services to food insecure, low and moderate income residents of Northampton County with a primary focus on the city. The program also helps refer these individuals and families to other social services provided by the Hispanic Center of Lehigh Valley. Nine is YWCA. That is a STEM program, Tech Girls Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math. This is an after-school program for girls aged 9 to 13. Delivering those, again, science, technology, engineering, and math. 10 is Kellen Foundation. That is a mobile market retrofit. I just want to back up quickly. I should have mentioned this before. Some of these projects that you see in the spreadsheet, they say they are funded by CDBG funds. Next to that, there is a column which says that they are funded by CDBG-CV or CARES funds. The CARES funds are put in here for information purposes only. It's a separate pot of money. Those were previously approved. They're put in here for context to show that some of these entities which did not receive standard CDBG funds were funded in other ways. So back to Project 10, Kellen Foundation. This is they basically have a mobile market where they provide fresh produce to low and moderate income individuals along with other clientele throughout Bethlehem. They're the ones that are operating or were operating at A. Hart's Market. It's a great service, and it's not just providing the food. They also do education in schools about eating healthy and basically sustainable eating and the cost benefits of that. Project 11, New Bethany Ministries Choice Pantry. This pantry offers nutritionally balanced carts of groceries to clients. They provide a three-day supply of healthy groceries, and that's both the individuals and families. Project 12, New Bethany Ministries Trinity Soup Kitchen. This soup kitchen provides daily meals to individuals on the north side. This has been going for almost 40 years. It primarily targets low and extremely low income individuals and also individuals with mobility problems that can't reach the south side meal center. Project 13, CACLV. That's the Homeownership Financial Counseling Project. What you see is the project called CAFS. That is financial counseling. The program called BHAP. That's the City of Bethlehem's Homebuyer Assistance Program. That provides down payment and closing cost assistance to first-time homebuyers that meet certain income requirements. You can't get those closing cost assistance things under the BHAP program unless you also participate in financial counseling and homeownership counseling. So those two programs go hand in hand. Project 14, that's Friendship Park Residential Facades. These are targeted residential facade. It's a targeted program that is meant to improve facades in the immediate vicinity of Friendship Park. The goal is to obviously increase desirability in the neighborhood, increase property values, and strengthen local businesses. Project 15, that's the Redevelopment Authority, Blight Remediation. The CDBG funds help pay for program delivery and staff that administers the city's blighted property program, as well as payment for third-party contractors. There are a whole bunch of associated costs like appraisals, title search, legal work, and that's where this money goes. Project 16, Housing Rehab Grants and Loans. This is City Housing Rehab. And what this is these are related to our city's full home rehabilitation programs, our emergency home rehabilitation programs, and facade improvements. The city has a lot of available housing resources to help owner-occupied homes. And some of these programs, for instance, if you have serious emergency problems, individuals, again, who meet income requirements, can apply to the city for some reimbursements. They also can come to the city proactively to get their house up to code. And we provide all sorts of different assistances through deferred payment loans, and we have other mechanisms. 17, housing rehab program delivery. Those are program delivery costs related to housing rehab. As we discussed in the last meeting, program delivery costs, which can include, you know, staff costs, salaries, and benefits, those are targeted to the individuals actually carrying out the services and basically making the product appear. This, in our context here, those are the, you know, the housing rehabilitation construction manager and the individual who works with approving individuals that apply, making sure that they're eligible. Those are the people that are, again, working with the consumers on a daily basis. So that's program delivery. Project 18, YMCA child care wing renovations. There are extensive renovations being funded by this project in the child wing, classrooms, hallways, lighting, flooring, common areas, and a kitchen expansion. It is also allowing the YMCA to better comply with state and other safety minimum standard of cares and licensing regulations. It's going to allow the YMCA to basically get a type of a certification which shows that they're going above and beyond what they need to under applicable state law. Now we're at Project 19, which said Northside 2027 Organizer. So this particular project is in a little bit of flux here. As of now, based on the city's internal capacity, this money is, long story short, this is going to come into the city. It's going to be in-house. The city, the administration has obviously a serious commitment to community organizing and community development, and the actual functions of the position are going to be likely very similar to this, but again, this is going to be coming in-house based on the city's capacity. Now we're just gonna go quickly to the home programs. Item 20, this is Community Housing Development Organization, CHODO allocation. And as I mentioned before, CHODOs are certain types of community partners. CHODO is a private nonprofit community-based service organization that is staffed to develop affordable housing for the community it serves. The city must set aside 15% of its home allocation for housing development activities similar to these. And again, they have to be invested in eligible activities related to home funds, which we sort of, it was on a previous slide. 21 home program administration, that are salary, wages, and benefits of local staff, as well as professional fees for consulting and planning, similar to what we talked about for the CDBG admin costs. Item 22, city rehab, housing rehab, that's owner occupied or rental. As we mentioned, this is full homeowner rehabilitation projects, emergency rehab projects for owner occupied eligible individuals. And we structure, as we said before, we structure the assistance as grants, deferred payment loans, and other mechanisms. Item 23, that's the home buyer assistance. That is CLB. So the city uses home funds primarily for two types of home buyer activities, and we work with CACLB in connection with these activities. There's home buyer purchase assistance, which, as discussed, provides down payment and closing cost assistance, and then there's direct buyer subsidies. So we talked about some of those things. Now, 24. That's affordable housing project requests for future opportunities. Home projects are heavily regulated and often need a lot of lead time, but they can come about quickly. They're often difficult to get off the ground. Home applications, unlike CDB applications, are accepted on a rolling basis. So it's very, very important that the city's situated, if a great project comes along that's eligible, that there is actually money to fund that. Because again, and then there's restrictions applicable to home funds, that the money has to be allocated and spent down within a certain period of time. So having this particular line item allows us to respond with flexibility and speed as opportunities may arise for affordable housing related projects. Those are the projects on the spreadsheet. And the last thing, we will go to our next steps. So the next step is to bring forward a resolution for council's consideration that would approve submission of the 2022 annual action plan. Hopefully this resolution will be considered by council on July 19th. We have a very hard submission date where we have to get the annual action plan to HUD or we forfeit all of our funds, which means all of these nonprofit subrecipients would not have any of this money. It would be obviously a serious problem. So again, we said, when is the next CDBG application process opening? It's going to be opening in the fall of this year. We are going to be announcing the dates. That is all I have for the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Bodoni. Is there anyone else from the administration who wanted to make comment? Thank you for the presentation, the PowerPoint, and the spreadsheet. Is there anyone on council who has questions or comments for Mr. Bodoni? Yeah. Ms. Quita?
Thank you very much. Great presentation. Is this typical, that the way the cycle works, that you're practically asking for the next round of funding before they've even gotten the checks?
It seems like a bizarre process, but yes, that's how it works. And it does create some timing problems, and it obviously creates confusion. Because yes, we are talking about something that was started last year, the planning process for this 2022 program year started, you know, last year in the summer. So yes, that is typical.
Okay. And the grantees are all aware of this, so they plan accordingly.
We publicize this. We do have long-standing relationships with a lot of these subrecipients. Many of them are quite experienced in doing these applications. Obviously, we're always looking for new potential projects, and one of the things that the Community Development Bureau does is not just oversee subrecipient compliance and all the HUD monitoring, but we provide technical assistance to entities that think they might want to apply for these types of funds. It's sometimes quite difficult to determine whether projects are eligible, and that's so we work closely with entities and individuals, that particularly entities that might be able to apply for funds.
Any other questions or comments from members of council?
Thank you for that very clear and informative presentation. And it's wonderful that we can use these funds to address such a wide range of important programs and services for the benefit of those who are watching tonight or at a later time who might be interested, an organization who might be interested in applying for these funds. Could you say a bit more about where they can be watching to see when the next cycle opens, et cetera?
Absolutely. So if they go on the City of Bethlehem's website, even if they just go to Google and search CDBG and City of Bethlehem, it'll get them to that page. But you can find CDBG. It's in the Department of Community Economic Development page. But that we don't just post it on the website. We actively put out notices. You know, we're going to be putting things out on social media. We're going to be emailing our list of subrecipients and encouraging various, you know, it goes out in various ways. So I guess the next step is for us to announce a date and to get these communications out, and we will inform City Council, and that sort of gets the publicity process.
So somebody who's following the City of Bethlehem Facebook page, for example, could expect an announcement there?
I think that's reasonable. It definitely is on the city. It's on the department Twitter page, but obviously we can put it elsewhere.
And that would be great. Yeah,
yes.
Just for those who may not know about the funds or the acronym or...
Absolutely.
That would be great.
Yes, that will happen.
Thank you.
And I would just add to that anybody from any organization, even if it's not the grant period, the best thing to do is contact Mr. Bodoni or the department to come in to meet, to talk, to get an idea as far as... So if anybody knows of any organization that wants to, the door is always open. Just because it can be a confusing process. And the one thing to add to that is oftentimes the federal budget and the fact that they don't generally pass those things all the time just makes the process that much more confusing. But I would encourage any organization or anybody just to contact the office tomorrow or whenever to kind of start that process for the next round.
And can an organization receive feedback on an application who was, you know, declined, who didn't receive the funding? Can they sit and talk?
I wasn't involved in that, but I would believe yes. I mean, we encourage any unfunded orgs to apply in the next cycle, so there's going to be a conversation, and we can help guide them.
And oftentimes what happens is that organizations will come in with a project, and CDBG might not be the best fit for that project. So, or it might be a situation where it's better to use for, and I think Mr. Rodoni talked about this, like the prevailing wage that's connected to CDBG. Sometimes it doesn't make sense to give an organization $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000 if that kicks in those type of requirements. But then we try to find a different way to fund those individual projects. So CDBG is obviously an important tool, but what we really try to do with any organization that has a project going is try to find the formula about the best way to use the grants and federal dollars and things like that. So CDBG is obviously one of our biggest, most consistent tools, but it's really just that kind of, we're trying to work to find any way we're able to fund it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? Mr. Verdone, I had a quick question. So on page 3 of the handout, it notes that the CDBG award remained pretty much the same, close to the dollar, but there was an 11% increase in the home award. I guess I'm wondering what dictates how much money we get? I mean, is it just the federal budget? Is it the formula changes? Is it our demographics change? I'm sure it's a very difficult formula I don't need the full HUD.com language, but I was just wondering, what is it? Is it looking at population? Sure. Is it looking at per capita income?
I can give you a little summary here. There will be no algebra or anything else, but so HUD determines the formula by measuring certain objective measures of community needs, including poverty statistics, population, housing overcrowding, age of housing, population growth lag relative to other metropolitan areas. I'd say those are the basic factors for CDBG. Home has sort of separate factors, and home is also a formula grant. Chopped that out, but long story. So home has similar indicators, and that it is a formula. But there's poverty indicators, age of home indicators, not quite similar to CDBG, but there is some difference.
Understood. And are some of the surrounding boroughs also entitlement jurisdictions, or is it only cities like Allentown, Bethlehem, and Easton? For example, would something housed in Freemansburg Borough or Hellertown Borough, do those boroughs receive CDBG money? Because we are to keep it within our city boundary. Is that correct?
Well, there are some options if certain conditions are met to provide money, outside the direct boundaries of the city, if there are certain links to certain populations. Now, I'm not sure about, I believe Allentown gets CDBG funds. Now, I believe the counties, I know Lehigh County and Northampton County, they manage some CDBG funds. So there's an entitlement program which flows down to our city, and then there's state CDBG funds. So there's sort of all these different ways that the CDBG funds come from the federal government and filter to states and then filter down to other levels of government and municipalities. So I'm not exactly sure about surrounding municipalities, but that would be pretty easy to figure out.
Understood. Well, thank you, Mr. Verdone. I would just say, in closing my remarks, when looking at $1.4 million for CDBG money, that's a lot of money, and $430,000 for the home program. And that obviously, as demonstrated in everything that you've given us, is going to make an impact like we see every year. So thank you for all your efforts and all the best, Mr. Bedoni. If there are no other questions or comments from members of council, I will turn it to public comment. Thank you. Is there anyone in the public who wanted to make comment on the CDBG home allocation? I'll start on the left. I'll go to the middle. And I will conclude on the right. All right, thank you, everybody. So that adjourns our first public hearing. And now I'm going to call to order our second public hearing to accept recommendations and public comment concerning a proposed bill that would establish Article 343 and associated resolution for the creation of an affordable housing LRTA program, which will be referred to as Southside LRTA District 2. And I will turn to a representative from the administration to make that presentation.
Good evening. Would you like me to answer your CDBG question?
If you wish.
There are no longer entitlement boroughs. The county absorbed all the boroughs in Northampton County probably around 2010. And so it had been communities like Plainfield Township and Bangor Borough and Lower Nazareth, ironically, but they're now part of the county program.
Understood. Thank you, Ms. Carmen.
Sure. So I'm here to talk about the, or to, you know, to provide you with information for the public hearing for the LRTA. So as a refresher, I know we just talked about this a week ago, the Local Economic Revitalization Tax Assistance Act allows municipalities like the City of Bethlehem to exempt new construction and improvements to certain deteriorated industrial, commercial, and other business property. So the act requires that we host, we as the city host a public hearing on the boundaries of LRTA. This is specifically to talk about the boundaries of LRTA, not necessarily to discuss the exemption schedule or any of the other details of LRTA, but focus primarily on the boundaries. We are to present recommendations concerning the locations of these deteriorated area or areas and consider criteria, and these are named in the act, such as unsafe, unsanitary, and overcrowded buildings, vacant, overgrown, and unsightly lots of ground, disproportionate number of delinquent properties, excessive land coverage, defective design or arrangement of buildings, streets, or lot layouts, economic and socially undesirable land uses, and properties adjacent to these areas are eligible if new construction would encourage, enhance, or accelerate improvement of the deteriorated properties within these economically depressed communities. We engaged the Planning Commission on the properties at the May 20, 2022 meeting. The public hearing was advertised, and we have engaged the majority of property owners, several who are here this evening to represent their properties. So the maps were distributed to council last month as part of the communication, and I presume are included in your packet. They're labeled as the 2022 Southside LRTA analysis, and they're color-coded. Let me first talk, though, a little bit about what our process was. Certainly, we had to consider the criteria outlined in the act, but when we evaluated industrial parcels, we used additional criteria. We asked questions like, are they vacant? Are there barriers to development? Is the lot of brownfield, meaning were there environmental challenges on the property? Is it irregularly shaped? What are the other development constraints? Are there opportunities for development? Are the opportunities what we want to see on these parcels? If the parcels were developed, we wanted, you know, we asked the question of what business is located there? Is this the kind of business we want to incentivize to expand? Is there room for expansion? Do they have a plan for expansion? We also evaluated the commercial properties. We asked similar questions about vacant lots or vacant buildings. If they're occupied, is it a use we want to see at that location, or do we think there's a higher and better use at the location? Do we want to encourage development? Is the LRTA the best tool for the property? Because we always look at the tools in the toolbox and not just assume that LRTA is the only opportunity we have to encourage development. So the expiring LRTA, which on your paperwork is the blue zones, is 1,629 acres. What we're proposing is a much smaller area, and it's outlined in red on your documents, is an area of 242 acres. It's an 85% reduction in size. Of these parcels, the zoning includes 15 acres of commercial property, and commercial includes CB and CL. 225 acres of industrial and 2 acres of industrial redevelopment. Of the commercial parcels, two-thirds of the acreage includes existing buildings. These are buildings like the Wendy's or the CVS or the Rite Aid Strip Mall. We have some vacant buildings and we have the Eastern Gateway. Of the remaining commercial parcels, one-third are vacant lots with no structures on them. Of the 225 acres of industrial property, 182 are potential business expansions, and 44 acres are vacant. I want to talk a little bit about the existing industrial acreage. 45% of that is a manufacturing company, 21% is transportation and construction services, 19% is the U.S. cold storage, which is food cold storage, 12% is office and technology space, and only 4% includes warehousing of this acreage. Of the vacant parcels included, the ones that have nothing on them, none of them are slated for warehousing. The remaining 2 acres are part of the Steel General Office Building. So it's the tower and the East Annex Building. These are the only properties that were not previously in the LRTA, and they were evaluated based on the significant need of incentive to see reuse and redevelopment of these parcels. We've talked at different times about just how challenging they are. So ultimately, what we think we've done is identify properties that are good for development for the city, that fit the criteria for LRTA, and that we want to encourage for development. I'll take any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Carner. And as you alluded to, I know we had the committee meeting not too long ago, but as we look at tonight's agenda and having this public hearing, I will open it up to members of council for questions or comments related to Ms. Carner's presentation. Dr. Van Wert?
Just a quick question, really just provoked by further reflection on it, and I do think it falls within the boundary discussion, which is if somebody owns a piece of property and they also, their entity, whether it's themselves personally or their development company, has other properties and they owe back taxes to the city on those other properties, does that influence at all the decision to grant them the LRTA benefit?
So the first thing we look at is what are the back taxes. We had passed an ordinance with council's cooperation a couple of years ago that prevents us or allows us the opportunity to not issue permits for properties that are delinquent or not code compliant, and we state on our permit application that you have to let us know if there are any properties that are delinquent in water, sewer, you know, all the criteria related to that. We actively track that in our enterprise software system, so they would not get a permit to start the project if they owed back taxes on another property. And to apply for LRTA, you have to apply for the permit and receive the permit to get the LRTA benefit.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
And I would just add to that, Dr. Van Wert, that Ms. Carner is just slightly incorrect. The first thing we do is we call them and say, pay your taxes. So just, I got that list on about January 5th after I got sworn on January 3rd as far as who didn't pay their taxes in 2020. And as you can imagine, I looked through that thing very closely. Mm-hmm. And then, as we've talked about before, too, one of the things that happens is that people create these different LLCs. So there can be one with, like, you and me, and there's one with, like, me and Mr. Spur, and then it's a way to kind of get around that. But the first thing, and Ms. Carner, too, is somebody that if these conversations come up as well, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, Ms. Carner, but it's one thing that I know she's done for several years, is if somebody comes in to talk about a project, it's just like, why didn't you pay your taxes here? Why, what's going on here? You're on this list and so on and so forth. So the first thing we do is we call them and say, pay your taxes, or we will talk about it publicly. So, and everything else comes out.
I'm a little gentler than that, just for the record.
I'm not gentler than that, but no, she is. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from members of council?
Just a question here on the parcels. There's a parcel that is listed twice.
Maybe there's an error in the resolution. If we could talk offline, I'll take a look, and we can eliminate the parcel if it's listed twice.
Okay. Well, they have different acreages.
All right. Let me take a look at that.
Thank you, Dr. Enix. Ms. Quintet?
I just wanted to thank you for, we had a conversation about the delinquent taxes issue, and you discussed perhaps adding some language into the ordinance and finding it, and it sounds like you found the fact that without the permitting they can't even begin to, so it does create that barrier.
Yeah, and I do think though there's some nuance to what you and I talked about, that if it occurs after the permit is pulled, is there something that we can do for that as well? So
right.
Yeah. So yeah. We're continuing to explore that opportunity.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Ms. Ramsey-Smith.
Thank you. Thank you again for your presentation. A couple questions. Actually, I was going to bring this up under new business tonight, but maybe that this will be relevant. Not only just for the LRTA, but for any property that's going to get some tax incentive, do we have anything on the books if the property is unkept? And it's not developed yet, and it's unkept, and the owner is not keeping up with the property, but they're in the process of getting tax incentives to develop the property.
We can deny permits if they're not code compliant. So if there was a challenge with the property that, and this was actually, I don't remember the act number, but the state passed a law, and that's what our ordinance was based off of. So it's not just delinquent property taxes, it's code violations. So if we take them to the magistrate and they're found guilty, we can't just say, hey, your property looks bad. We have to actually take steps to identify it that way. And so, yeah, that is something that we do track in the system. It's tied to the same permit question. You know, as far as this, whether or not we would give them an incentive, it's unlikely. Now, if we have a new owner that has purchased a property that's got some challenges with it, we do want to encourage the redevelopment under new ownership. We just don't want to reward bad actors.
Right, exactly. And I guess, you know, I've just heard from people in the community complaints about some areas where the development is already, you know, most of the development process is in place and permits are already granted, but still things are not happening and the property is being unkept to the point that I think it may be, you know, in violation.
Yeah, and it's likely we have not issued permits. It might be in the process of development. We can talk about which properties those are, and we can send inspectors out. But it is probably likely that we have not issued the permits, that we don't have everything we need to be able to move that project forward.
Okay, great. Thank you. And did I hear correctly, did you say that the only new area for this LRTA is the GSO offices? Or is that this is the area that was not in the LRTA before?
That's correct. So it's both the tower and then the East Annex property. The vacant parcels to the rear were included in the affordable housing LRTA because that's broken up in a couple of different parcels, so that was approved last year. But that is the only former TIF property in the proposed Southside LRTA too.
Okay. And my last question is, and I can't recall if we talked about this at the last committee meeting, but what percentage of this new LRTA would be residential?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Possibly.
So anything in the central business district would allow, not the industrial areas, but would allow, let me just take a quick look here at my notes. So there would be an allowance for residential property on the 15 acres in CB or CL, as well as the industrial, the SGO project, which is 2 acres. So 17 acres in total.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? Ms. Leo?
Thanks, Trent. I'm having one of those thoughts that makes my heart beat really fast, so if you can bear with me. I was looking at some of these, some of the addresses, and I was wondering how do you decide what should be developed and what shouldn't be? Specifically, I'm thinking about 616 4th Street. That might have been in the previous LRTA. Was that in the previous LRTA?
It was in the previous LRTA. Let me just find 616. So that's a vacant lot.
Across from the church.
It is across. And we do know about the vote to consolidate congregations, and you know, we do know that there is conversation around that. If that property has development, we certainly want to encourage affordable on that property. And so it was in the previous LRTA. And looking around at large lots, that is one of the few large lots in the CB or CL area.
And I guess that's where my thought process is, and this might not be the appropriate time for the question or conversation, but I don't know when it is, so it's going to happen here. And that was last time we did the LRTA conversation, it became really hard to live on the south side. Everything got super expensive. And I'm just wondering why we can't just have a vacant lot. Like, if we put a building there with 60 more apartments, 60 more cars on the south side where we're bumper to bumper anyway, like, why are we incentivizing?
So the South Side went through a large planning process probably in the early 2000s, and that property was identified by the community as a good opportunity to have a number of things, including residential. I think there was some commercial space, there was green space on that property too. And so, you know, just because it's a little bit older, we continue to take a look at what the plans that have kind of gone before us encouraged, especially ones that had. This was the Sasaki plan and the subsequent plans around the MPPs and Southside Vision and so forth. So that has remained topic of conversation on the South Side. So I don't want to represent that it is just our idea plucked out of thin air. It is based off of an extensive planning process that the community went through.
Any other questions or comments?
Is that like through what kind of community outreach? If you don't have the data, like right off the top of your head, that's fine. But.
So I don't have the data. I can. The society plan, I think, is still on our website. I can certainly, and if it's not, I can get you a copy, and you can take a look, and it'll talk about all the, you know, the conversations and, you know, the thoughts around. It wasn't just that lot. There were a lot of issues tackled by the south side.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? Ms. Carter, I just had one quick question. I think it was referenced already. So in terms of the expansion of the LRTA, the SGO, the tower, the East Annex were not in the previous LRTA, but they were in the previous TIF boundary.
They were.
And that expired in the last couple of years.
November of 2020, I believe.
Thank you. If there are no other questions or comments from members of council, thank you, Ms. Carter. And then I will open it up to public comment for our second public hearing. I'll go around the room, starting on the left. If anyone wants to comment on the LRTA, Ms. Rodriguez. Yeah.
Eddie Rodriguez. Now I'll give my new address. 330 13th Avenue, Apartment J, Bethlehem, PA, 18018. I just wanted to make comment with what you have mentioned regarding, and also a member from City Council regarding ownership of properties. What happens if the renters of owner-occupied properties that are out of state and they don't take care of their properties here in the city? I got a stain in my glasses. So, and then the properties go unrepaired for long, long periods of time. I've heard this over and over again. They're not being repaired. There's a change of contact with the owners. So, what happens in a place where that owner is responsible, they live out of state, they make no contact with their renters, and yet the property goes on and on and on unrepaired. And at times they're severe, like water damages, the basements and the apartments, or the holes in the walls. I've seen this. And these folks are suffering with that. You know, a city ought to do something about that. So, again, how do you track that with the out-of-state ownerships? And she said something, with all due respect, they're not issued permits. So how do you make that contact with that individual that changes contacts, telephone numbers and addresses and so on and so forth, and they use somebody else in place of that so they don't be contacted through their original contact way, of residence wherever they live. That's my point. So that's the only question I have in reference to that. And I wish you would answer, or yous would answer something in reference to that.
Thank you, Mr. Rodriguez. And if you want to stick around for after the meeting, I'm sure Ms. Garner or someone else from the office may be able to. This is the time for us to take feedback from you, but we'll all be here once the meeting adjourns, sir. And then, is there anyone else on the left who wanted to make comment on the proposed LRTA District 2? Turning to the center, is there anyone in the center who wanted to make comment? Mr. Chowder?
Bill Shire, 1898 Avenue. Two comments, one short, one long. The short one is, I noticed in the list of properties in the new LRTA, some of them don't have street numbers. I mean, they got street numbers, but they don't have anything else. Like, it just says 3rd Street or it just says 4th Street. Makes it kind of hard to figure out where it is. The longer comment is on affordable housing. And once again, there's no definition, of course, in there of what affordable housing is. HUD says that any housing that's less than 30% of your income is affordable. And for the city as a whole, the per capita, the median income is $52,000 a year, which translates to $1,300 a month, and which is rumored to be the affordable housing by one developer who is planning to have affordable housing, affordable units. And that would mean half the city couldn't afford to live in that affordable housing. So that's a pretty high number. So there's two ways of approaching this. One would be to have a dollar figure, which would have to be updated every year. $1,000 a month would be a nice round figure, but it might be a little bit high because that translates to, I worked out the calculation, now I don't remember it, but it's a rather significant amount of money, so maybe that's a little bit too high. The other approach, a way of approaching this, would be to specify an income level to, and I don't know if the data exists for the city as opposed to the Lehigh Valley or the counties, but if there were data as to what income is a low income, very low income, extremely low income, that would be another way of approaching it. The other option, of course, in the ordinance is the trust fund. And though it hasn't been determined how exactly it's going to be used yet, but and the figure is given at $26,350, which and I do remember this calculation, that comes out over a 10-year period is just about exactly $220 a month, which is not insignificant, but again, maybe a bit on the low side. Though the ordinance does mention that the funds in the trust fund will be invested because they don't need to be used right away. We're talking about a 10-year period. And if they do manage to invest at a rate higher than the rate of inflation, then that $220 would be slightly on the pessimistic side. I'd be, as an economist, I'd be interested in knowing the specific methodology to arrive at $26,350 a month. But of course, the affordable housing is not going to be, there's no magic bullet to solve this problem. And not even the LRTA was not going to be sufficient, I don't think. And we have had some talks about alley houses, another possible approach. But I think we really have to start thinking outside the box here. It's a very severe problem nationwide. I just learned in some cities that people who want to rent an apartment, there is sometimes a bidding war. It's just incredible. Apparently, just not enough has been built since the Great Recession. So, and I don't think we should be waiting until the completion of this study next April. I think the need is far too urgent. So I'd like to propose that in September, when everybody's back from whatever they're doing during the summer, we have a sort of a town meeting, like we did on the ethics a few years ago. Council and the administration could cooperate on this and give people time to do some research on, because I'm sure a lot has been written on this by economists and other people. We need to really start thinking outside the box and have sort of a brainstorming session in September to see if we can't solve this problem in the city of Bethlehem. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shire. Is there anyone else in the center who'd like to make comment on the proposed LRTA District 2? Seeing none, looking over to the right. And that concludes the second public hearing. We will move on to our regularly scheduled council meeting. starting with the approval of minutes from the June 21st, 2022 meeting. Any comment on the June 21st minutes? Minutes stand approved. Moving on to the public comment portion of the meeting, starting with any subject not being voted on this evening with a 5-minute time limit. Just a YouTube reminder for our audience at home, if you start this meeting after 7 p.m., please make sure to scroll ahead so that the YouTube stream is current rather than a recording of an earlier portion of the meeting. And we'll go, we only have one person signed up, and that would be Ms. Lynn Rothman. Welcome, Ms. Rothman.
Good evening. Lynn Rothman, 870 Wofford Lane, Bethlehem, PA. I'm speaking tonight on behalf of the Bethlehem Environmental Advisory Council, or EAC, to make the public aware that we have an open position. The open position is to fill a vacancy by a member that needed to resign, so it only runs until January, although in January the positions will be open again for reappointment by City Council. The only qualification or requirement, I should say, is to be a resident of the City of Bethlehem. And the application process is basically submitting a letter of intent and your resume. In order to just get the details, or if you have any questions or want to learn more about the position, just go to our website, bethlehemeac.org, and there you'll find the application instructions and our email to submit your application. So please spread the word. We welcome people, even if you don't want to be a member of council. The public is always welcome to attend our meetings on the first Thursday of every month at 7 p.m., either in person at Illis Mill or via Zoom. And again, you can go to our website, bethlehemeac.org, to get the Zoom link. Thank you very much, and please spread the word.
Thank you, Ms. Rothman. And to you and all the volunteers on the EAC. That was our only speaker who had signed up, so I'll go around the room again. Again, this is any subject not being voted on this evening with a 5-minute time limit. Turn to Ms. Rodriguez.
Eddie Rodriguez, 3330. 13th Avenue, Apartment J, Bethlehem. Yeah, I got some major concerns with what's happening in the city. It's something that I've been talking about for years, and I got to bring it up over and over again because I think it's a major concern, and I will keep on talking about it until something is done. I would like to see police officers more active in the areas of trying to stop people from eating stop signs and speeding, and I don't see the chief here today. I'm somebody that can represent her. Because I got involved in two separate incidents. One was yesterday and another one just before the holiday, where somebody actually ate the stop sign, and I was on South 4th. So ran it right through, and I was like this much away from that individual, and this person came speeding. Right, man, I was scared the living daylights out of me on two different occasions. This has got to be stopped. People are not respecting the stop signs at all. It happens in Bethlehem just as well as downtown. The speeding has increased. It's getting out of hand. That Main Street, even though I don't live in that area, is still bad. I want to see something done about all what I've been talking about. The drugs are still there, and the fentanyl is still there. I know the police department has their hands tied, but more has to be done. More patrolling. Make it more visible so that the community can see that you're out there for them. And hopefully this can happen, that this can be stopped. These people got to be scared stiff on the police department to a point where they can be seen on corners or walking or patrolling. What happened to the substations? What happened to those? I want to see those returned. But a simple fact is people need in the community to make contact with the police department on a more secretive basis so they can report what's happening. These block watches ain't working. You say they're working, they're not working at all. They're just restrained to that particular area. I don't hear nothing here about block watches. On a rare occasion, that's when I hear it. I want to see more happening in this city. And it's not happening. It's sad. You talk about grants and all this. You talk about mental problems that people are having in the community. It does happen. The homelessness is really, really bad in this city. And I'm scared stiff of what happens because in the near future, this is going to increase also. And I'm very concerned. The other thing I want to mention is that the Old York Road, which I taught to the girls in Mike Alco's office, they took care of the matter, but the matter wasn't solved. The bridge has damage on the underpass on Old York Road. You know about that, Mike. But the damage is still existing. If there's anything that could have been done, it should have been done there and then. I haven't seen it yet done. I saw a big, huge, enormous, humongous truck. And yet, when I went to check it out, days after, patches of cement were put there. Not that I can see anything major done. What happens if that water seeps through those holes and patches and something happens to that bridge? And I can have a complete disaster. So more has to be done. I'm asking Mike to jump right on it and find out what happened. Why wasn't much more done? That's a major bridge. And I'm concerned about that too. And I will check on it, and I will report on it each and every time something like that irresponsibly done and not taken care of. The other thing I want to talk about, I got 16 seconds, 15, is the UGI, which I taught to Mike also. When they make their repairs, make sure that those streets are repaired properly. Third Avenue was not. I hear from Mike, yes, I hear. Oh, it'll be done. But you drive to Third Avenue and Fourth Avenue and it's extremely bad. Ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. That's what you get. I'm sick and tired of my car going up and down. I got a very good vehicle. Yet I have to go more worse than it ever was because the repairs weren't done properly. It's out of hand. And I don't think there's no follow-up on it until I call Mike's office and I talk to the girls. And I'm sure that Mike does his best. I talked to him many times. But more has to be done. Make the repairs sufficient so that the drivers can be more safer and their cars don't have major repairs. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rodriguez. Is there anyone else to the left who would like to make comment on anything not being voted on this evening? I turn to the center. Is there anyone in the center who wanted to make comment tonight on anything not being voted on? Mr. Antalis.
Stephen Antalis, 77 Ridge, a.k.a. the gentleman in the front row. At last meeting, comments were made on my statement, to which I took exception, but this is my first opportunity to reply, which I will do now. Integrity, independence, dedication, duty, intelligence, and the will to serve the public good, I consider to be prime requisites for someone seeking public office. I view his knowledge of history of the community the person lives in and longevity of their residency are strong assets. I repeat, are strong assets, not prime requisites, as which was misinterpreted. At the last meeting, I also referred to what I and some others consider one of the best council groups the city has seen. And they were a unique group. And I referred to them in a biographical sketch, And I very carefully preface my comment that this is a comparative statement. Comparative means do not compare it to anything else, or I am not comparing to anything else. Comparative. They were unique because they were all older men living in the city for their entire lives, and the council was also bipartisan. But I also, over a number of meetings, have spoken about this council taking past councils out of the valley into toward a peak. The implication being that the council of the 1890s and 90s was a peak council. And the present council, since they're on a peak, an improving council per se, could be considered part of that group, which would be quite an honor. But the major difference between that group and this present group is longevity in history, which does not seem to work against this present council. But what bothered me really was implication by this individual who owns, holds a high position in this local government made that distortion. But also, can someone turn on his light for me, please? What also bothered me, which I also took me aback, was for a person, excellent, thank you, sir, a person was mentioned as being a great individual, but this person was cited for unethical behavior by a grand jury and Pennsylvania Ethical Commission. And I received phone calls about those comments, and this was also reflected in a blog of a very popular blogger. Now, I have never emailed City Council before, but I've started that, not to complain, but I recognize that I might assist and provide a service by emailing historical items of interest which would help them in their deliberations. Some might be overkill, but that's my intent, to be of assistance, to provide that which might help them come to the same level of that 1890s consul. Also, I'm going over in just a very short statement.
Thank you.
In all the city council meetings I've ever been to, I have never experienced where a private citizen addresses council at their council meeting on council business and comments made about the speaker by the mayor of the city. It's never happened before, or rarely, never to my experience. Why?
Thank you, Mr. Antalics. Is there anyone else in the center who would like to make comment this evening on anything not being voted on? I turn to the right. Is there anyone in the right? All right, thank you. Moving on to our second public comment. This is going to be for any ordinances or resolutions that are on tonight's agenda for a vote. There is no one signed up in advance, so I'll go back around the room. Starting with the left, anyone who wants to make comment on anything being voted on this evening? Seeing none from the audience. Looking to the center. And I'll conclude over here to the right. Anyone would like to make comment? Thank you, everyone. So that concludes our public comment portion. Moving on to old business. Any old business for members of council? Seeing none. Communications. Resolution, or Communication 6B.
Memorandum with an attached resolution from Edward Boscola, Director of Water and Sewer Resources, recommending awarding a contract to Gate Grace Industries Incorporated for the Mincy Trail Siphon South Access Improvements. The cost is $77,400. The term is 120 days from the notice to proceed. There are no renewals.
And Resolution 10A is on tonight's agenda. Communication 6C.
Memorandum with an attached resolution from Michelle Cott, Chief of Police, implementing a special event parking zone for 2022 Music Fest.
And Resolution 10B is on tonight's agenda. Communication 6D.
A memorandum from Councilwoman Paige Van Wert and Councilwoman Hillary Kwiatek, proposing an ordinance permitting the keeping of backyard chickens in residential areas by amending Article 1159.
And this proposed bill will go on the July 19th council meeting agenda for first reading. Communication 6E.
Memorandum from City Solicitor John F. Spark Jr. with proposed approval resolution and an associated public utility right-of-way agreement between the City and UGI Utilities Incorporated. The agreement would grant the utility the right to construct a gas regulation station on city-owned land in Ullman Park at 940 Sassafras Street in consideration for $8,000.
And Resolution 10C is on the agenda. Communication 6F.
Memorandum from City Solicitor John F. Spark Jr. with proposed approval resolution for a Fifth Amendment to a tower lease agreement between the City and New Singular Wireless PCS LLC, successor in interest to Pennsylvania Cellular Telephone Corporation, doing business as AT&T Wireless Services in South Mount Park.
And Resolution 10D is on tonight's agenda. Moving on to reports, I have nothing to report this evening. Mr. Mayor?
Just a couple things. First of all, I want to thank Mr. Bedoni and Ms. Carner for their presentations tonight. I know a lot of work went into both of those, and I really appreciate the fantastic presentations. I also want to thank Chief Aki, who was here, as well as many individuals in City Hall who had successfully planned and executed our July 4th fireworks yesterday. A lot of work goes into that as far as setting that up. I also wanted to just say, I think a lot of people saw that it's likely, if not, it's been signed that we're going to have a new fireworks law come out of Harrisburg. So we're already starting to look at that as far as what that could potentially mean as far as local action is concerned. But that's obviously a conversation we'd be having with City Council, but I did want everyone to know that we're on top of that. Mr. Evans will also be giving a update at the next council meeting about kind of where we are from a financial point of view with tax revenues and everything else through our first 6 months. So he'll be presenting that during the mayor's report on July 19th. And the last thing is, I know several people have reached out to me. There was a event yesterday on Payroll Plaza that involved several or multiple Confederate flags, and not First Amendment guaranteed, so not something. I think it had something to do with reading the Declaration of Independence, but several people had reached out, and I don't believe they went through the permit process, which, as we know, is important. I just wanted to let everybody know that it's something that is protected by the First Amendment right to assemble there in the way that they choose to, even though, obviously, as I said, a lot of communication about the Confederate flags that were present with the rest of that rally, but that is something that is protected by First Amendment speech and not something that we obviously are able to stop. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Reynolds. Dr. Van Wert.
The Community Development Committee met on Tuesday, June 28th at 6 p.m. in Town Hall. The administration gave a presentation on the Southside Lerda District 2. The committee voted to recommend approval of the Southside Lerda Ordinance Resolution and referred it to full council for consideration at a future council meeting. Bill number 14-2022 is on tonight's agenda for first reading. The administration gave a presentation on the city's land development process. This was for informational purposes only. No votes were taken.
Thank you, Dr. Van Wert. We don't have any ordinances this evening for final passage. Moving on to new ordinances. The previously mentioned Lerda 2, I'll ask the clerk to read Bill 14-2022.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, enacting Article 343 of codified ordinances entitled Local Economic Revitalization Tax Assistance, Southside Lerda District 2. Bill 14-2022 is sponsored by Ms. Leone and Ms. Wilhelm.
Thank you. So before I turn to members of council, I know I had had individually some brief discussions with other members of council, and there's potentially the will of council tonight to postpone the reading. I'll open it up to discussion, and I'll just ask any members of council to allow all members of council to give comment if they choose before we make any official motions, if that works for everybody. So I will open it up to discussion for members of council. Ms. Leon?
I appreciated the meeting that we went through, but I did have other questions after that meeting, and just because of the timing and the week and the holiday weekend closed on Monday, I didn't get to the bottom of all the questions that I had, so that's my hesitation, is all I want to say.
Thank you, Ms. Leon. Any other questions or comments from members of council? I'll start with Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Thank you. I think we had a very good community development committee meeting. There was a lot of dialogue, and I know from my perspective, I have concerns. I think the Lerda can be a great thing for blight remediation and development, but my concern is that the fee in lieu of is too low. When it passed with the last council last year and I voted against it, and my concerns are that I was reading up with the Urban Institute on calculating fees in lieu of, and I was really impressed by it. One of their conclusions is that if a jurisdiction is going to allow developers to pay fee in lieu of instead of building on-site affordable units, then if the fee in lieu of is not set at an appropriate level, this can undermine the jurisdiction's affordable housing goals. And in the fall, we did an eight-week housing solutions workshop with NYU, New York University, and it was really valuable. The administration was involved. And one thing that came out of that workshop was one of the housing experts, or for lack of a better word, stated that he felt that our fee in lieu of was very low and recommended relooking at it. So I would like to consider delaying the vote until we can look at coming up with a fair fee in lieu of instead of doing affordable housing units. I think there was also other discussions. One thing we talked about was the administration brought up that, you know, this is not inclusionary zoning and the incentives, but I think it's important for everyone to realize that when we talk about incentives for affordable housing through inclusionary zoning or incentives for affordable housing through tax abatements or tax incentives, it's the same thing. The same goal is to get affordable housing and to work toward an inclusive and equitable housing community within the city of Bethlehem. So by making sure that we have a fair fee in lieu of for the LRTA, that really is going to work toward our goal of an inclusive Bethlehem. And right now, I think we're working out against our goal with the $26,000 fee in lieu of. I know someone also brought up, and I agree that, you know, a lot of the land is going to be more manufacturing, warehouse, whatever, and I think it's important that we look at the, development is great, what adverse effect, if any, is that going to have on transportation and environment and infrastructure? And I know in other areas throughout the country, if there, again, there's a tax incentive or tax abatement, they do have the developers put money toward offsetting some of those adverse costs. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cramsey-Smith. Any other questions or comments? Ms. Gleitek?
My desire to delay first read to the next meeting, and I would say I think that 2 weeks' time should be adequate for us to resolve these issues, is more related to the conversation that Ms. Carner and I have had about the delinquent tax situation and just making sure that we have really good, strong language in the ordinance. When, you know, at the time of the first read, I would rather have that settled and before we move forward on it. And I appreciated very much learning tonight the very small percentage of the new borders, the parcels that are designated or would be designated for warehouse. So I thought that that actually eased my mind a bit on that concern. So my reason for wanting to delay is more related to that language.
Understood. Thank you, Ms. Gleitek. Any other questions or comments from members of council? Dr. Van Wert?
My desire to postpone is very much reflected by Ms. Cramsey-Smith's comments and Ms. Gleitek's comments. When we are looking at the fee itself, I think one of the reasons I would really like to very much redo this fee is because our housing situation in Bethlehem is dynamic. It's constantly changing. So if we are relying on one flat fee for a LRTA that is going to be, I believe it's 5 years, the changes within our own community can vary. It can float one way, it can float another way, and I really think we need a formula rather than a fixed fee, and that's what we would be coming up with through some help from NYU and the Urban Institute. So that's the main driver behind my concern.
Understood. Thank you, Dr. Manwer. Mr. Mayor, I'm going to just give every member of council a chance to speak first. Any other questions? Ms. Wall?
I don't necessarily have anything new to add, but I wanted to underscore what Ms. Cramsey-Smith said and what Dr. Van Wert. I also agree that we should take a little more time to look at that in lieu fee. And then Ms. Cramsey-Smith alluded to, in the second half of her comment, something known as a linkage or an impact fee, where, just to speak a little bit more about that, with industrial development, which has an impact on housing and needing to house folks who are working there, if there's a relevant connection between that and affordable housing, as well as other issues that she mentioned. And that would be new to Bethlehem, and I think we need a little bit more time to research that. And I also wanted to thank Ms. Carner and Mayor Reynolds, actually, for extensive conversations that we've had. I appreciate the information and really would look forward to a bit more time to see how this could work in Bethlehem.
Any other comments from members of council? Mayor Reynolds?
Yeah, just two things. One is as we know, this process that starts with us and then goes to the school district and goes to the county. So I would probably have a question for President Colon and Mr. Pinella as far as if amendments are offered or whatever it might be 2 weeks from now, and we obviously have no problem with postponing this 2 weeks, but what would that mean as far as the advertising time, et cetera, just because we start to run into the school district and the county budget process and everything like that?
Thank you, Mayor Rose. I'll turn to Mr. Pinella in 1 second to expand, but I'll say this is something that I became more aware of once I became council president. I don't know if I was ever educated on it or I just didn't pay attention when Mr. Bodoni used to tell me things, but it's that if we make any significant changes to an ordinance on the floor of council, well, anytime an ordinance is presented, there are advertising timelines that the clerk's office must follow so that I can't propose an ordinance right before the meeting and then we vote on it. And then in that language, there's also reference to if there's any significant changes to an ordinance, that then we have to re-advertise it so that we don't advertise one thing, show up at 7, make it something else, and then no one in the public ever was able to make comment on it or was aware of it. So I will turn to Mr. Pinella about what would trigger the need to re-advertise an ordinance when we, if amendments were to be passed.
Thank you, Mr. President. So just for those that are curious, we're looking right now under the third class city code, which is Title 11 in Pennsylvania, specifically Section 11018.9, Publication of Proposed Ordinances. Just by way of some background, subsection A requires initial publication, and that initial publication must be done through a newspaper of general circulation, not more than 60 days, nor fewer than 7 days prior to enactment. We're normally firmly within there, that's never an issue. Subsection B is contents, that's not really germane for what we're talking about right now. But then subsection C, re-advertisement, specifically talks about what we're talking about here, some amendments to ordinances. It provides that in the event substantial amendments are made in the proposed ordinance before voting upon enactment, council shall, within 10 days, re-advertise in one newspaper of general circulation a brief summary setting forth all provisions and amendments in reasonable detail. So realistically, if an amendment was going to be done, now is the prime time to do it because we have to advertise it within 10 days of enactment, of the amendments that would be. Generally speaking, if just to use an easy example of what we're all talking about here with the fee in lieu of, that to me, in my legal opinion, would qualify as a substantial amendment, and that would be something that would firmly fall within the subsection C that we're talking about. But if you're talking about general, you know, a grammatical error, maybe the is spelled T-E-H instead of T-H-E, that's not necessarily something that would fall under subsection C. So overall, right now, we're not looking at a massive delay, seeing as we're only at the first reading and it has just been advertised. But with that said, we should act with some haste just to make sure that we can hit our requirements at the county level and at the school district level.
I have a question for Mr. Pinella, and for the sake of the room, just for clarification. So let's say that we postpone the first vote to the next meeting, mm-hmm. and then there are some amendments that meet that criteria for substantial. Can we have the first vote that night with the understanding that it'll be re-advertised prior to the second vote, or must it be re-advertised before any voting happens?
In my reading of the statute where it says before voting upon enactment, okay. I would take that as the ordinance officially taking effect. So in between the first and second reading, if there were amendments that were being placed, that advertisement would fully fall within that time frame.
So just for clarification then, we would be able, if we postponed the first reading to the next meeting and amendments were passed at the next meeting, we could hold the first vote and then we would satisfy that requirement by re-advertising in between the first and second vote?
Yes.
Okay. And that's something I think is important just for timeliness as we look at, and I don't know, Mayor Reynolds, if you could speak to the timeline for the school district or the county. Obviously, we're up against, or Ms. Garner, I know we're up against somewhat of a window. I mean, it's not something that has to happen tonight. I think we could all agree on that, but we also want to be respectful of, you know, we're looking at after tonight, we have 11 more council meetings this year, so I would assume the county and the school districts have about 11 more, give or take, depending on when they meet in the calendar month. So that's just something I want to appreciate Mr. Pinella sharing that and clarification, even for myself, because that's something that I wasn't accustomed to being mindful of prior to sitting here in the center. Any other feedback from the mayor?
No, and we do not have any issue with it being postponed to July 19th and August 2nd. Obviously, just any amendments that could be offered then, that could be approved, denied, whatever it is on July 19th would be beneficial to us, just because obviously with the school district, once they start into the school year, as we all know, and the county starts in the budget process and things like that. So, and then obviously from our point of view as well, any amendments that council is planning to offer, and I know we've spoken with many of you and you've spoken with many members of our staff, any amendments that council's going to offer, the earlier that we know about them, the more we are able to give feedback to avoid the possibility on July 19th of having to go back and forth. So then, Justin, as we've always said, our staff is always open to have those conversations. And then I just wanted to talk for a minute about the payment in lieu of, because obviously there's been a lot of conversation about it. And I think that the important thing to start about is that the administration did not pick $26,350 because we thought that's what the fair number was. If we thought that we had the power to pick the fair number, we would pick a number of 70, 80, 90, 100,000. And I think that's important in this conversation. This is not about picking a fair number or what affordability gap, all those things that are true. It's about what are we able to do. And the term I have used over and over again is how do we incentivize the incentive? And if we took a look at the two options, either getting the money and the payment in lieu of or building the units, I feel very strongly, and the administration does, that we have a lot more flexibility if we get the money. So what it comes down to is it comes down to a bet. At what point do you raise the fee and which somebody is going to then build the 10% of the units, which I believe, if you take a look at who is benefiting from that versus the ability to get the money and be able to direct it to wherever it is. And we've talked a lot about the biggest gap in housing in the Lehigh Valley and Bethlehem is for people that are whose AMI is under 30%. And that's who the people that we're trying to help. That's where we're doing the reinvestment fund. That's why we're doing the affordable housing strategy. That's why we're doing all of it. So we want the money. From a public policy point of view, we feel very strongly we want the money. The $26,350, and you know, we are open to a sliding scale. And obviously, if City Council passes to raise it, that's fine. But we didn't pick $26,350 because we were trying to answer what's fair. We were trying to answer at what point is the breaking point by which people are going to pay that number rather than build the units. So every dollar that we raise above that, in our mind, from our conversations, from our economic development experts, there becomes less likely that they pick the fee. So it's not about what number is fair. We did not pick $26,350 just because we think that is fair. We picked it because we have two options. And legally, we do not feel that we're able to just mandate a certain number. A lot of times when you take a look at what other cities are able to do, whether or not it's New Jersey or Massachusetts or Connecticut or California, they have different state laws that allow them to be able to mandate one of these fees. We are not able to mandate one of these fees. So when we pick the $26,350, we are not picking that because we think that is a fair number. Or we, because like I said, if it was only about what's fair, then we would pick a number that's 70, 80, 90, 100, 110, 120,000. And if it's the will of council to move it off $26,350, and that's where the votes are, then that's where the votes are. But it just decreases the likelihood that 3, 4, 5 years from now. Picking the units becomes tough as far as enforcement. It becomes tough as far as monitoring. All of those things are regulatory costs. But I do think it's important that whatever happens here, when we talk about the $26,350, we did not pick a number that we thought was the fair number for somebody not to build affordable housing. If it was up to us, we would be able to mandate people building a lot more affordable housing than they're able to. So the $26,350 is not about a number that we believe is fair. It's the number that we believe the market is going to allow people to pay that so we can get the money to then be able to use that money with the flexibility. So I just wanted that, I wanted that to be stated, is that the payment in lieu of, we would love the fact to be able to charge 70, 80, 90, 100,000. And if you ask me, is that what you would like to do or that's what you want to do? In a vacuum, if we were able to mandate this, absolutely. But we're not looking at, that's not the cards that we've been dealt from the state, Mr. Colon. And I just wanted to pass that along here before we move on.
Understood.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Reynolds. I will, any other questions from or comments from members of council? Ms. Crane?
Yeah, if I could just clarify, because I was on council and we voted for the 26,000. And I think when we talk about affordable housing, I'm sorry if I use the word fair and that touched a nerve, but quite frankly, I think it's all about equity and inclusion. We talk about fair affordable housing. So in my mind, I think it is fair, but I guess it's just a matter of semantics. As I said previously, when we talk about what is, for lack of a better word, equitable and I think reasonable, when we look at the average that the developers will save with a program like the LRTA over the 10-year period is $1 to $2 million, and we're asking them for $26,000 a unit, then I'm sorry, I have a hard time, and quite frankly, I don't think that is fair. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? So I think what we definitely heard tonight is it sounds like there's a majority, if not unanimous, will of council to postpone the vote. Then the question becomes, until when? I heard about potential proposed amendments to the fee in lieu of the delinquent taxes and potential linkage fee with industrial development. So the question, my preference would be to look at the next council meeting to give everyone on council in conjunction with Mr. Pinella and our city clerk as resources and the administration adequate time to get together or come up and, as individual members of council with each other with proposed amendments. The discussion is then, do we think that that's adequate? And then that way we would be able to potentially hold the first reading that same night and have a first vote, and then at the first meeting in August have the second vote to finalize the ordinance with or without whatever amendments might pass, and then be able to pass the ball on to the county or the school district, whoever it would move on to from there. So I turn to other members of council for feedback. Are we comfortable with the July 19th, and give us till the next council meeting?
I won't be here, but I trust you guys to make my decision.
Good time to go on vacation.
My concern is I do want to do everything to try to expedite this, but I'm not sure at some point in the next 2 weeks or three, I may be inaccessible due to family circumstances, so I can't guarantee that I can have it ready for the July 19th meeting, or nor will I be here, so that's my only concern.
And I'll open it up to other members of council, but I would say if there's uncertainty, and I understand the uncertainty, Ms. Cranston, there's always potential to introduce something at the second reading if it came to that. It may just postpone potentially the vote another week, but then if we're looking at that potentially anyway, I would say that that's a what if. And not to speak to whatever the circumstances are, but we could always look to see if that July 19th date doesn't work out given whatever circumstances are going on.
And can I just clarify for Attorney Pinella that if for some reason July 19th I am not here or don't have it available, will we vote on the first reading, or would the first reading be delayed?
Hey, so long as we have a quorum, we can take a vote. And if it's the will of council to continue it forward, the statute, are you talking about the time frames? The time frame that we're talking about specifically with amendments is we just have to hit that. The amendment has to be advertised in newspaper of general circulation with a fair summary of what that amendment is 10 days prior to enactment. So realistically, we could do something after, if it's the will of council, could make an amendment at the second reading. It may delay depending on how early we can get the notice into the newspaper of general circulation. But it may delay it a week. I don't want to speak necessarily to that or what the purchase price may be or anything, but so long as we get that amendment in the newspaper of general circulation 10 days prior to an enactment, there's no real restriction there for the second reading.
Thank you.
Any other feedback from members of council?
At the risk of asking a dumb question, what you're saying is that at the second reading, an amendment could be offered. We would vote on the amendment. We would vote on the ordinance itself and pass it. Then we would advertise the amendments. And then, in other words, what I'm asking is, enactment the same thing as the final vote, or is enactment something that takes place like a certain period of time after the final vote?
Enactment would be the day we take our absolute final vote.
Okay, so we would have to vote again.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
All right.
I'm assuming I'm assuming with what the councilwoman was referring to there is if an amendment was offered up at the second reading, then yes, we would have to absolutely schedule for another meeting after that for the final vote, including that amendment, assuming that amendment were to pass. If, just to look at all scenarios, if at the second reading someone were to offer an amendment and that amendment were to die and it just didn't have enough support, there wasn't majority, then the necessity of furthering advertising after that is a moot point because it never actually passed to begin with.
Mayor Reynolds?
I just want to add, but there's also the ability, I believe, that if you offer the amendment within 10 days of the second reading. So if there was the first reading on July 19th, and even if somebody, and I believe, because I remember this situation in council before, Mr. Spurrier can correct me if I'm wrong, and the amendment was clear about what was going to be offered at the second meeting, it still then is able to be advertised for 10 days.
And I would agree with that.
So it's essentially you need 10 days before the second meeting to be able to have whatever amendment would be advertised.
So long as it's going into that advertisement, absolutely.
Yeah. So then it doesn't necessarily need to be, as long as somebody doesn't wait more than 18 days or 19 days from now to offer that, you still would be able to have it advertised for August 2nd.
And I would agree with that. Again, just the practicality concern of it is we have to get that into the city clerk as soon as possible, because it's not like we can call up the Express Times and have it run the next day. You know, they do have bookings that we have to be aware of with that, so we would have to act quickly in those circumstances.
But if something happened on July 19th, and then say the next day, or the day after that, if somebody looked at it, maybe read the newspaper, checked the email, saw that this is what City Council did on Tuesday, that would allow the opportunity to be able to get that there.
So again, I would just say, if we want to set a target date for July 19th, if it's agreeable to Council, we could work towards that, and then if things didn't line up, there's always actions that can be taken. But rather than start with further down the calendar, I would say we should shoot for the next council meeting and then make every effort we can, given different circumstances, to have everything ready for the next council meeting, if possible. So if that is the will of council, I will accept a motion and a second to postpone the first reading of the Southside LRTA 2 until our next council meeting. That's July 19th.
So moved.
Second. So motion by Dr. Van Wert, second by Dr. Enix to postpone to July 19th. Any discussion on the motion? I'll ask the clerk to call the roll on the motion to postpone.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leyland?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Blum?
Aye, passes 7-0. We will have the first reading of LRTA 2 on July 19th. And again, I encourage everyone to use Mr. Pinella, Mr. Miller, and the administration as resources amongst ourselves also as we prepare those amendments. So moving on with the agenda for tonight, going to resolutions, the clerk will read Resolution 10A.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Grace Industries Incorporated for the Mincy Trail Siphon South Access Improvements. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leone and Ms. Wilhelm.
Discussion? The clerk will call the roll, please.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Blum?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10B.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that during the period 12 noon, Friday, August 5th, 2022, through 11:59 p.m. on Sunday, August 14th, 2022, and in connection with the 2022 Music Fest Festival, all violations of the provisions of Article 531, parking generally, and the subsection specified in the resolution shall carry the modified fines as specified in the resolution. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leone and Ms. Wilhelm.
Discussion? The clerk will call the roll.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10C.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with UGI Utilities Incorporated for a public utility right-of-way agreement on city-owned land in Ullman Park. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leone and Ms. Wilhelm.
Discussion?
I just have a quick question.
Yes.
So this is at the corner of Sassafras and Wyandotte, is that correct? I'm just curious how long it's going to take to build and the extent to which it will, do we have any sense of that, and that it will create traffic issues?
It should be just a few months to construct.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or comments? We will call the roll.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Venix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10D.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the mayor and controller and or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the city solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with New Singular Wireless PCS LLC for a tower lease in South Mountain Park. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leone and Ms. Wilhelm.
Discussion? We will call the roll.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0. I'll accept a motion and a second to consider resolutions 10E and F together.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Ms. Wilhelm, second by Ms. Cramsey Smith. Any discussion? I'll ask the clerk to call the roll on the motion.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye. The clerk will read the resolutions and call the roll.
Certificates of appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of Pennsylvania Legislature, Bethlehem resolutions are hereby granted for 1200 Spring Street to replace existing slate roof and damaged gutters, and 925 Prospect Avenue to install an aluminum fence and three aluminum gates around the property's perimeter. Resolutions E through F are sponsored by Ms. Leone and Ms. Wilhelm.
Any discussion on them? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Moving on to new business. We will have a committee of the whole meeting right here in Town Hall tomorrow, July 6th at 6 p.m. And the subject will be to review the proposed conflict of interest ordinance. Any other new business? Dr. Enix?
The Finance Committee will meet on Tuesday, July 19th at 6 p.m., and the subject will be to discuss budget transfers.
Any other new business from members of council? Seeing none, get home safe, everybody.